The purpose of these broadcasts is to acquaint you with the vital human necessity for charity. The statement of this can best be made by that distinguished first citizen of the nation, the President, who will explain to you the national circumstances that lead to the necessity for this broadcast. The artists, speakers, and organizations, and the members of the American Federation of Musicians through their local, who are participating in this service, exemplify the ideal of charity as they give their wholehearted services to further the worthy purpose. The two great broadcasting systems are contributing valuable time and facilities as part of their gifts to this great national humanitarian movement. As this program is being broadcast from coast to coast, we turn first to the Detroit Symphony Orchestra and the mixed chorus under the direction of Victor Kolar for the opening number. It is America. We are gathered here in the Masonic Temple in Detroit. With us is Gerard Swope, chairman of the committee for the 1935 Mobilization for Human Needs. We now introduce Mr. Swope.
Ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to present this principal speaker of the evening, the President of the United States.
My friends, it is a high privilege once more to appeal to the men, women, and children of America for support of another year's mobilization for human needs. I can properly congratulate and thank the country for its splendid response to the appeal for the care of the needy in the years of deep depression from which we are happily and rapidly emerging. Since I spoke to you at this time last year, in behalf of this great national undertaking, much good has been accomplished, both through private charity of all kinds and through generous assistance by federal and state and local government authorities. During this past year, the Congress and the administration have been making provisions for the employment of approximately 3.5 million unemployed persons in bona fide jobs, and the coming month will see the great majority of these people at work in the several states. The Congress has also enacted, and I have signed, the Great Social Security Act, which establishes for the future the framework for unemployment insurance, for old age assistance, and for aid to dependent children. But the full force and effect of the Social Security law cannot, of course, become operative until several years have elapsed. Nor will this law in any sense replace the proper and legitimate fields that are now covered by private contributions to private charities. I can, however, bring you good news this evening. The results of the September employment survey have just come to me this afternoon from the Secretary of Labor. During the month of September, 350,000 men and women were returned to private employment in the reporting industries of the nation. And the money in the weekly pay envelopes of these industries was $12 million greater than their weekly pay envelopes in the previous month of August. This means that the workers in these reporting industries had $12 million more each week to spend for the necessities of life. Furthermore, these latest and continued gains mean that nearly 5 million men and women have found employment in the reporting private industries since the low point of the Depression in March 1933. And during this same period, there has been an increase of over $104 million per week in the payrolls of these reporting industries. The September gain itself is the largest for any single month in the past year and a half. It brings back employment in these industries to the level of November 1930, and it brings the payrolls back to the level of May 1931. Recently, I expressed the hope that private industry would strain every nerve to increase their payroll, to increase the number of those whom they employ, and thus take from the federal government and from local governments a great share of the burden of relief. The figures that I have just cited to you lead me to a greater confidence that private industry is living up to my hope. We seem to be taking up the slack. Even those industries which were long backward in showing signs of recovery are putting their best foot forward. The so-called heavy industries, for example, show encouraging signs of improvement. Employment in this so-called durable goods group is now 62% higher than it was in the spring of 1933. Their weekly payrolls are 139% greater. This represents a net increase in employment of 1,185,000 men and women and a rise of over $40 million in the weekly payrolls of the heavy industries. I am citing all of these figures to you tonight because they relate to that kind of employment for which the government has definite statistics. But remember that they do not apply to the many other forms of employment of which there is no adequate record. For example, the small retail businesses that employ only a few people and the farms of the nation are not included in the totals of employment and of weekly wages which I have given you, but in their case also, it is common knowledge that many thousands of additional men and women have been provided with work. In direct proportion, as the nation as a whole more greatly receives, so is the nation in a position more greatly to give. Why, you may ask, if the distress and the unemployment are less, should the giving be greater? It seems to me that the answer is twofold. First of all, it is your hope and mine that the necessities of government relief, which are furnished by funds received by taxation of the general public, ought to decrease just as rapidly as human needs will allow. But the other reason is of deeper significance, of greater importance. There are, as you and I know, hundreds of thousands of men, women, and children who require the kind of assistance which private charity and not government should give. There still remains, and will long remain, a sadly distressed segment of our population, destitute, unprovided for, in the communities of the United States. These are the ones whose plight you, as a good neighbor, go out this week to call to the attention of their more fortunate fellows. It is with them that our private social agencies are primarily concerned. We know, for example, that medical care still needs to be extended to thousands who have not the means to pay for it. We know that great numbers of children still suffer from malnutrition. We know that families, separated or burdened by economic circumstance, must be reunited and given opportunities to move forward. We know that the hospital, the clinics, the day nurseries need and deserve our help. That homes for the aged, for the blind, for the incurable, must carry on their splendid work. And that the agencies that build up and help the youth of our community must equally and should equally expand and improve their splendid work. But we do not want to stop there. We want to emphasize the word work. Neither private charity nor government relief wants to continue to help people who can work but who won't work. There's only one legitimate excuse for unwillingness to work, and that is bad health or advanced age. It is the duty of private charity and of state and local agencies to take care of those who, for these sound reasons, are unable to work. And as I have so often said, it is the duty, the only duty of the federal government, to assist in this type of relief when private and local means have come to the end of their tether. The slogan of this 1935 Mobilization for Human Needs is this: be a good neighbor. And the practical way of being a good neighbor in this year of grace is for each and every one of us to support the splendid private agencies whose work has been so successful in the past. If each and every one of us answers by practical giving the sound appeal made for the continuance and for the growth of local welfare, we shall become the best possible neighbors in our own neighborhood.
You have just heard the President of the United States speaking to you on this program for the 1935 Mobilization for Human Needs.